Sally, good morning.
Good morning, Philip.
Thanks so much for joining me. Now, how closely do these gambling tactics used in video games resemble gambling at a casino or sports betting?
Well, so the issue that's come up most recently is called loot boxes, and it's similar almost to playing cards that you open up a packet that you're given, and you might have something that's high value or something that's low value, but you don't know until you open it up. The difference about loot boxes is that sometimes you get them for free through actual game mechanics. You just sort of find one or you get one during the game. But sometimes you can actually pay money to get these. So when you then have people paying money to access a loot box, which could have something of high value and something of low value, and that, but it's worth potentially monetary value, and that's when it starts to become a lot like gambling potentially.
Right. So a big concern that's been brought forward with this controversy is that children are, you know, a large target audience for these video games. Could exposure to gambling-like aspects of these video games encourage gambling habits early among such a vulnerable demographic?
It certainly could, although keep in mind that there are elements of gambling mechanics in games historically. So essentially anything that involves a chance or a random number or a chance-based mechanism could be likened to gambling. So the key is now that's more recently is this sort of micropayment. So it used to be you just buy a game and then, you know, you have coins within the game. But now micropayments actually allow consumers and gamers to pay money after they've already bought the game on an ongoing basis. So when you actually start to pay money, those microtransactions make these chance mechanisms a lot more similar to gambling. And we found actually within one study we did looking specifically at online games that resemble gambling, so they might be a poker machine or a blackjack that looks like gambling but isn't worth any money. But once people started paying money, they were actually substantially more likely to go on and gamble in real life as a result.
Yeah, right. So it does have observable outcomes.
What happens is that people start to think, well, if I'm going to be paying money for something, I might as well actually be paying money for something that has a real-world outcome. So people start to think about online gambling, and young people these days, and depending on how old they are, these are more likely to be older adolescents, so closer to the legal age, they can actually potentially access gambling sites, particularly the less reputable sites that have fewer age verification requirements. So we do want to be concerned about the education we're having for our young people through these video games that's actually teaching them about gambling through mechanisms without their parents essentially being aware.
Mm. Right. Well, I understand with this current incidence that's in the spotlight, there's an element of virtual currency involved as well, which is sort of like an intermediary between actual money and the gambling. How much does this affect the games in terms of the legality of gambling aspects and also in terms of like addiction and things like that?
Mm. The psychology of it is really interesting. And in using something like an in-game currency. So in, for example, Battlefront 2, it's called a crystal, or in other games, it takes other forms. But it actually is something akin to what casinos do. So when you go into a casino, you don't put your actual cash down on a casino table. You go and you exchange it for chips. And casino chips have less psychological value than real money because it's a step removed. So this psychological advantage then leads people to spend more chips because they aren't quite as analogous as real cash. So the same thing happens within the game. And it also is a bit confused because you might say spend $5 and get 2,000 crystals. So it's lost of what that actual crystal itself means, how much that money is worth. So it's creating this level of confusion that leads people to spend more and more, and then all of a sudden they're out of crystals and they need to get more crystals again. So this use of in-game mechanisms that's a step removed from money does lead people to spend more. In terms of the legalities, however, it's not as much just what money you put in, but it's about the money coming out. So if at the end of the day there's no real-world redemption value, if you're not allowed to cash out the in-game currency, it is not classified as a gambling opportunity.
Right. Okay, interesting. If you've just tuned into The Daily this morning, we're currently speaking with Dr. Sally Gainsbury, Deputy Director of the Gambling Treatment and Research Clinic at the University of Sydney. And we're chatting about video games using gambling features to encourage players to spend their money and keep them addicted to games. Now, Sally, as you've just been enlightening us all, there are lots of little loopholes and fine print details which distinguish different things when it comes to gambling and not gambling. Now, in Australia, casino and slot machine gambling is well regulated with attendance requiring RCG licenses and things like that. Through video games, there are no responsible gambling regulations. What strategies would you suggest that should be implemented in order to regulate video game gambling?
It is really important that consumers be aware and notified when there is the possibility to spend real money. So payers might enter a game or pay a small amount. They want to know what they're getting for that. So it's important for players to actually be informed whether they can progress to the same levels just through gameplay without any payment. So that what actually that is transparency of what you're getting for your money. The next aspect is where there actually should be warnings. So a game should be labelled if it has gambling content specifically in it. So if there is an opportunity for loot boxes or if there's an opportunity to sit down and play poker within a video game, that should be clearly labelled for the game so that parents can look at that or consumers can look at that and decide if that's a game they want to buy. So it's all about increasing transparency. In terms of the microtransactions, although most people actually spend small amounts, so most people spend less than $10 per month within various online games, some people do spend quite large amounts. So I've actually spoken to people that have spent tens of thousands of dollars within these games. And that's clearly a problematic level because there is no real world redemption value. So it is really important that these games actually have warnings for people, have education, have potentially limits on the amount of money you can spend. And if there is someone that's clearly spending at a problematic level, the game should have a responsibility to actually contact and intervene with that individual. Just like a gambling company has a responsibility if someone's demonstrating problematic play. So there's certainly a lot more that could be done to help protect players and to put things in place to help players make informed decisions within game.
Well, I mean, you're saying there's a lot that could be done. We're currently seeing inquiries into the use of loot boxes and gambling features in games, I understand. What do you think are going to be the potential outcomes of this? Is it going to be a positive step, or are we going to find these gambling issues are going to continue and perhaps even get more common and more problematic?
We certainly have seen a trajectory towards increased convergence of gambling and gaming. And what that means is that there are more gambling elements embedded into the games, online and video games. And the other way, there are also more gaming elements embedded into gambling activities in licensed venues. So that's likely to continue because current consumers and millennials do actually prefer to have skill-based elements within their gambling and vice versa. As long as the games are not regulated as gambling, there's very little that can be done in terms of regulation. There have been very few successes internationally of jurisdictions to actually have games take a step to protect consumers. So there's a somewhat of a reliance on the gaming companies themselves and on the consumers to vote essentially by saying we're not going to play that game, we don't think that's appropriate, or to lobby policymakers. But where the games are actually considered as a gambling opportunity, which doesn't happen very often, as I say, because usually there's no real-world redemption value for the chips, then it's up to individuals to be aware of those because the gambling regulators are unable to actually take action within those games.
Right. So there's both positive and negative outcomes on the cards. Sally, thanks so much for joining me this morning to unpack all of this. It's really interesting to see how we do try to keep up with constant technological changes when it does come to all of the legality and those aspects. Can you just tell us quickly, before you do go, if anyone does believe they have a problem with gambling, what should they be doing to get help?
So if people do think they have problems with gambling, they can make an appointment to see a clinician, and they can also look online at gamblinghelp.newsouthwales.gov.au and contact a counsellor to make an appointment on the gambling helpline. It's free to call anytime, and the counselling is free and confidential, and you can call 1800 858 858.
Sally, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thanks very much, Philip.